Hi. How are you, ladies? And gentlemen, brave enough to show up. Well done. I told you I'd be here. You guys didn't believe me. How about another hand for our guest, Penny Nance? Penny.
Thank you.
Great to see you. We were just talking backstage a little while ago. I told Penny that this is a brand new concept for us. We had no idea how this would work out. We have never, ever in talk radio 1210 history, since I've been here, ever done a female-focused event. This is the first of its kind. So you're part of an experiment here. I hope you like it.
I'm honored to be part of that experiment, by the way. What's the deal down here?
It's like church, Penny. Nobody wants to sit in front.
We don't fight. I don't spit. Come on. Come move on down.
How many of you, just out of curiosity, this was not homework, and we're not going to call anybody out. How many have had any chance to peek at Penny's book? Have any of you had a chance to kind of crack into some of it a little bit? Okay, good. We're going to be passing out some note cards. I think Jared may have mentioned that. And if you have some questions for Penny, I hope you'll write them down, because you're going to be so critical to this evening, and I really don't want to do the majority of the talking. I hope you ladies and Penny will do most of the talking. I guess we have to start with the events of the last 24 hours.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my.
Oh, my. Okay, now I'll just ask, because as we learn, as we know, if you're a Republican woman, a conservative woman, and by the way, you don't have to be if you're in the room, people are all over the map. We're not a monolithic group, so we all have our own opinions.
Right.
There are probably some Kasich people in here. There are probably some Cruz people in here. I bet there's some Trump ladies in here. So you Trump ladies are elated. You Rubio people and Jeb people were long ago depressed. But look, it is what it is. The cards have been dealt, and here we are. Donald Trump, it appears, versus Hillary Clinton in the fall. And we talked a little about this. And the thing that we hear more than anything else is Donald Trump's deficit will be with women. So where are you with this as the CEO and president of Concerned Women of America?
Well, I'm a conservative. And like Ronald Reagan, I believe that you vote for the candidate that is the most conservative that can get elected. And so that choice has dwindled, and I didn't get my first choice or my second or my third. I was in Virginia, so by the time I got to vote, Rubio was still in the race.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'm a good Mike Huckabee fan and Rick Santorum, and maybe that makes me establishment that I actually know these people, but I've been around the pro-life movement a really long time, and so have they. And so I know these people. I like Carly Fiorina. I mean, there were some really good choices. But now the choice is Trump or Hillary. That Trump train left the station, and either, frankly, I'm just going to tell it like it is. I'm going to be feisty. Either you hop on or you watch it go by. And if you just watch it go by, I fear that Hillary wins. And she is an anathema to everything I believe.
Yeah? Huh? All right. Okay, so conventional wisdom holds. Donald Trump must, I hear from certain people, must choose a woman as his vice presidential candidate. That is the only way to offset and start to bridge and mend fences with the ladies. You say?
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I think there's some really qualified women he could choose. I mean, there's Carly, who's already been chosen once. I don't know if you could, can you be chosen more than once? I don't know. And then, you know, Susana Martinez from New Mexico, governor of New Mexico. There's, there's Rebecca Clayfish, lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, who's my dear friend. There's Mia Love, who is the first African-American woman elected to Congress from Utah, who's pro-life and passionate, and Joni Ernst, senator from Iowa, veteran. I mean, Kathy Morris Rogers, number four in the House of Representatives. There's plenty to pick from of hardcore conservative women who would bring a lot to the table. So I would be happy to advise him if he went to reach out and ask me. Hadn't happened yet.
Out of curiosity, just show of hands, how many of you would consider yourselves very politically active? Very politically active. All right, how many of you would say you're moderately politically active? All right, and how about those of you who are kind of new to politics? You're just kind of swimming in this for the first time. That's fine, because I think there are a lot of people that for the very first time this year, for whatever reason, be it Trump, be it Bernie, be it Hillary, whatever, it's undeniable there are people coming out of the woodwork that haven't participated maybe ever or in decades.
That's right.
So to those women that are new, you say?
We need you. Thank you. Yes, and you know, look, life is long, and there's lots of seasons in life, and I'm a little different. I was involved in the pro-life movement. I was actually a member of Concerned Women for America in college, but I had these seasons in life when I was home with my baby, and I was barely able to take a shower that day. I mean, much less, you know, pay attention to what was really going on or be actively involved in, you know, an issue or talking to my congressman. But we, I believe, are at a tipping point in our nation. And really the point of the book, that once you get a chance to look at it, is we need the Esthers of this generation. And I'm happy to explain that
Please
analogy.
Do. What does that mean for people?
So if you have any kind of a biblical basis, there's an Old Testament book of the Bible called Esther. It's very short. If you get a chance, go home and read it. Esther was a 6th century B.C. nobody. She was an orphan who was plucked from obscurity, and frankly, by God, and married to the king. And so she became queen. And it was, you know, it's kind of an interesting story how that happened. She was adopted by her uncle Mordecai, who was in the king's cabinet, so to speak, who was a Jewish man. And so Esther was a young Jewish girl, but they didn't, for some reason, they didn't mention that to the king. And I'm not even sure he knew, like, the relationship. But anyway, she becomes queen. And she didn't choose it. And by the way, you remember, you know, women for much of history had no saying whatsoever in who they married or what they did. And she had no power, but she was chosen. And but the good news for her was that she very quickly became comfortable in that job because, let's be honest, it's good to be queen, right? You know, it's good to have people laugh at your jokes and, you know, bring you Starbucks in bed and the eunuchs take care of you. I mean, it was good. It was good for her. But unfortunately, there was a crisis happening on her watch, and she was having such a good time, like many of us here in America, many of us in American churches, so comfortable in our pews, we're missing the fact that there is a crisis happening right under our nose. And her uncle, Mordecai, finally had to come and get her. Like, he had to come be in sackcloth and ashes outside the palace to get her attention, because I guess you just don't want to hang out with a harem. And so her advisors came and told her, like, hey, your uncle's out front and things aren't looking good. And so they get together and he's like, Esther, you have got to wake up. Your people are being threatened. And so basically a 6th century BC version of Adolf Hitler was threatening to, was had the deal done that he was going to wipe out all the Jews in the kingdom. And all of this was because of, frankly, jealousy over her uncle. It was a horrific situation. And so he's able to finally get her attention. And she says, I got a little problem. I haven't been in to hang out with the king for a month. He hasn't called for me. And she wasn't allowed to go just on her own. He had to send for her. And so she said, you know, I could die if I go and he doesn't hold out his royal scepter. And he says to her in Esther 4, in the books that I sign, I write Esther 4:14. He says to her, you can pretend that none of this matters to you and won't touch you in the palace, but and God will raise up someone else, but you and your family will suffer. In fact, he says they will die. And then he says something that I think applies to all of us. He says, perhaps Esther, you were born for such a time as this. In other words, everything you've been given up until this moment, your home, your sweet family, any education, any material wealth that you've enjoyed, could have been leading you up to this moment in history in which you are to speak truth to power. And so Esther's response is what I believe it should be from all of us. She says, okay. And she says, if I must die, then I will die. I will do it. So she gathers her people together, her ladies together, and she prays, and then she goes into the king. And she doesn't just rush in there and say, hey, you need to know that your right-hand man is trying to wipe out my people. Instead, she lays it, she puts together a plan, she gets ready, she prepares, which is what you have to do in order to speak truth to power. And I hope my book does that, helps you prepare and to know what you're going to say before you get in the situation. And so she prepares And she has several banquets until she's built back that relationship and she tells him the truth. And she is able to save her people, and the evil Haman who was threatening the Hitler character is actually hanged on the scaffolding that was meant for her uncle. But it was this amazing story of truth and redemption and God's grace, but also of speaking truth to power. So I hope you'll take the time to read that story, but I'm calling out in this book the Esthers of this generation to learn the facts, learn the story, and speak truth to each other on the playground, in the classroom, in whatever your sphere of influence is, but also speaking truth to power.
The reluctance of, I think, a lot of people, this doesn't just apply to women, but since we're here to talk about ladies, let's talk about that, something that my wife and I discuss a lot. If you're in a group, I don't know, a book club, a Bible study, you're on the playground, you're on Facebook with a group of women that are friendly, traditionally, and then politics comes up. Mm-hmm. Inevitably, there are some that are extraordinarily vocal, right. And you know these people. They're just like a fire hose. And then there are those of us that kind of say, well, I'd just rather not cause trouble. You know, I'll just, okay, I know where she is. I'll just let her be her, and I don't agree, but I don't want to cause trouble. What does Penny Nance say to people on a Facebook wall of friends, friendly people that just, this election, we're going to see it. It's just going to be perpetual, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, I would guess, inside Facebook rooms all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
There's just flamethrowing. Am I wrong? I mean, is that what you ladies are seeing? How do you engage?
Well, I would say, first off, you should, anytime you feel like you're in a situation and you have something to say, something to share, then you must. You're being called to speak up into the culture. Don't swallow your words or look at your shoes because you're afraid to make waves. But I will also balance that with, you know, there's a proverb, cast not pearls of wisdom before swine. I mean, there are times when there are people that it doesn't matter what you say, and you know you're never going to bring them to
your
side.
There's a lot of swine out there is what she's saying.
But I, you know, I wrote this book after I had a situation in which I was at an event for my husband for his holiday party. I'm using the air quotes.
We're at Newman. You can say Christian.
No.
Christmas.
This was not a, let me tell you, it was not a Christmas party. This was a holiday party. And when you're at a holiday party, you know, you don't say Merry Christmas, right? You don't talk politics. Somebody sneezes, you may not even be able to say God bless you. I don't know. But so I was on my best behavior.
There's a bar at least, isn't there, I hope?
Yeah, there was.
Okay,
actually,
good.
Yeah.
But
so, you know, I'm on my best behavior because, you know, I'm with people that we don't really know. And he works for a corporation that has headquarters all over the country. And so I didn't really know all these people. But I knew the rules going in. And by the way, I wear hats just like you do. I'm in wife mode. I'm there to support him. I'm not there to talk about me or, you know, one of my kids' games or whatever. I'm not. So I don't know. You're talking to strangers. You find middle ground, right? And often it's your kids that you find middle ground on. So all of us in this group of people that are sitting together waiting to go get dinner, find middle ground of our kids, and everybody's got a kid going off to college, and we're talking about SAT stress, and we're talking about who got in where, and you know, there's always that parent that's over jubilant about a mediocre school, and you're like, good job, we're so happy for you, like whatever, I went to Liberty, what do I care? But so then they were talking, they asked a question, they said, no, what does your daughter want to do? And so my husband said, well, you know, she's going in as a freshman, but if you asked her right now, she'd like to be, you know, a news anchor on Fox News or CNN. And at first I looked at him like, she doesn't want to be on CNN. Nobody watches CNN. But he was trying to be normal, right? So he said, but it didn't matter because they glossed right over CNN and zeroed in on Fox News. And they were relentless, eye rolling, and Fox News, because it's code, by the way, for conservative. And one man even leans forward and he says, let me get this straight. Are you okay with her choice in careers? And then my husband goes, yeah, that's what's on at our house. And so, oh no, now we're outed.
You're marked.
Human resources had made a horrible mistake and let conservatives in. They must have an outreach to idiots or something. And it just devolved from there. And I mean, I'm making jokes about it now, but let me tell you, at the time, I was not laughing. I was stung because I was under the impression we were supposed to be on our best behavior and respectful. But somehow, the intelligentsia on the left did not get the memo.
And so does Penny Nance say, it's been nice talking with you, excuse me?
Well, actually, what I ended up doing, and the funny thing, there was one person sitting there who knew, this is funny, one of the guys sitting there who's kind of new in the company realizes that, you know, the pin's taken out of the grenade here and that there's a problem. Because I'm just like, my face probably said it all. And he tries to make nice by saying, well, you know, I met someone once when I lived in North Carolina who worked for Fox, and she was really nice. Maybe I could dig up her card and introduce you to somebody. And I'm like, I think I'm okay. I didn't tell him. So, I mean, you know, because I'm on Fox, like I wasn't going to say anything. But I was just like, it's fine. I think we're good. But I didn't say anything. I did manage to work. There was one person sitting there who knew this gig, and I started. He said, talking about the election. I said, yeah, our daughter will be voting for the first time in this election. It's pretty exciting. I said, she's kind of like the people in New Hampshire. She wants to interview each candidate, and I start going through all the candidates that she's met, and they're all Republicans. Like she's met Rand Paul and Marco Rubio and Ted. She loves Ted Cruz, and they're like, oh no. They spawn. They shouldn't have let them reproduce. So I made a big deal. It's like she's going to vote Republican. It's going to be great. So I kind of left it at that and moved on.
How many of you ladies, out of curiosity, how many of you, earnest, sincere, honest statements to you ladies, you must vote for Hillary Clinton because she is a woman? How many of you have been told that, or that's been inferred in mixed company with friends on Facebook or whatever?
With friends.
Where a woman has specifically said to you or on a Facebook page or something, Hillary's a woman, we're women, we got to stick together. One more time, a show of hands. How many of you have heard that? Okay.
That's half the room or more.
You say?
I say that's ignorance. I mean...
But how do you really, when somebody says that to you...
This is what I say. I think feminists are so excited about using the word reductive. I would say that is the most reductive thing I've ever heard. You have basically boiled me down to my, lady parts. I am a complicated human being, and it is purely ignorant. And by the way, the issues that we've got today are so important and so big, we cannot play. We should never be choosing our candidate just based on anything, like just based on race, just based on gender. It has to be based on their leadership of our nation and whether or not they can bring us forward and make our country better, whether they can protect our children. We have serious issues. We're at war. We cannot play. And so, they do have this sort of idea that somehow you're a gender Judas, right, if you don't support women. And, I think we got to take that head on because that is just absolute foolishness.
One of the things in 2012 that came up that was just painful for me as a man, I must say, a conservative man on the radio, was when a guy that had a slam dunk win ahead of him, running against a woman in the United States Senate from my home state of Missouri, goes on Springfield television and says about abortion and a woman being raped and getting pregnant, well, it's not really a big deal because women have a way of shutting that whole thing down when they get... all that's good and holy, Penny, that's the kind of thing that instantly is slapped on every Republican candidate out there, has to answer for that guy saying that.
Yep, that was Todd Akin.
Todd Akin, at Missouri, and he lost. And he lost something that was easily winnable because of that moment. Men, on this issue of abortion, I asked you this on the air, and I'll ask it again. Abortion is so sensitive anyway, amongst men and women, and people are all over the map with it, but men often clumsily talk about it, and I wonder if, do you wince? Do you wince when you hear men discussing abortion in political circles?
Well, I'm old enough to remember when there was not any really, and I'm trying to think if there was any exceptions, really any pro-life women in the U.S. Congress that, or at least that would go down and fight for our issues. Thank God we've remedied that. There are dozens now. We, in fact, when we did the 20-week ban just recently, it hasn't passed yet, by the way, but I mean, passed the House, but we haven't gotten, the president obviously wouldn't sign it. But we had dozens and dozens of just amazing women that went down. So, you know, I am thankful for Chris Smith from New Jersey and Joe Pitts from Pennsylvania. Many of you all may know Joe Pitts, who were willing to fight hard when we didn't really have women that could do that job. You know, it takes two people. So I actually disagree that men don't have a right to have an opinion on the issue. And what's really sad to me is the feminists have done such a great job of bullying men, but it's kind of turned around to bite them, because now I think the way to the get out of jail free card when the girlfriend's pregnant is like, you know, I'm, it's your body, it's fine, here's $300, go have an abortion. Because now they get to wash their hands of the whole ordeal instead of being real men that step up to the plate and say, I love you, I'll marry you, or even if they won't, if that's not the situation, I will support you and help take care of this baby. Don't have an abortion. I'm there for you. Because that's one of the biggest indicators, by the way, of a woman having an abortion, is support from her partner.
The National Football League. the last couple of years, it's not new, but it has come up more often than not lately. Abuse toward women. Some of these players, I mean, there's a player, for instance, again, I talk about Kansas City. I come from there originally. Andy Reid, who just drafted a kid who was convicted of assailing his pregnant girlfriend at the time. I don't know what to do with that or how to talk about that, and I wonder how do women view things like the NFL, which seems to kind of publicly keep atoning or trying to atone for, we don't endorse and we don't sponsor and we don't allow men to treat women this way. But then these things happen. These things pop up, and it's such a huge sport. Mm-hmm. Women are fans of football, too.
Right.
Do you have an opinion on that? Where do you come down on that?
Well, I mean, again, we're not monolithic, so there probably is a different opinion in each one in this room. You can't, I mean, the organization can't control every single player, but they certainly can deal very clearly and decisively when you do have those situations. And, I think that they should be fired. They should be penalized for it. And I think if they're, I believe that if they are strict enough, that certainly it would be a deterrent to that behavior. But people are broken. People are sinners. They do things.
So if you've been convicted or caught on video, convicted of beating a woman, raping a woman, do you think there's any place for a guy to come back and play football in the National Football League or any major league sport if you ran that team?
I wouldn't welcome them back. I mean, there's redemption, certainly, but you can be redeemed and do a whole bunch of different jobs. And, you know, these are men that are paid millions of dollars. And let's be honest, they're also role models for our kids. It's not just about putting on a uniform and going out and hitting another guy. I mean, that's part of it. But you know, whether they want to be role models or not, and, I know that different ones have said, don't consider me a role model. Well, too bad. I mean, that comes with the job, and so I think where much is given, much is required. That's what I would do.
What are the two, well, I mean, I guess you don't have to pick two. Do you have a single top-of-mind issue that you think, as women, politically, let's engage here? We're critical mass. This is where women, more than anything else, need to step up and engage right now. Is there one or two?
No, I don't think there is one. In my book, there's 12 chapters, and 10 of those are specific issues. And I think every woman has her own issue that she's concerned about, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's the economy, if you're a business owner, whether it's, you know, social issues, which is what brought me to where I am today. Those issues are the ones that lit my fire. But everybody's different, and I think you engage where you feel called to engage. Where's your passion? You know, there's a range of issues that are all very important, and all and again, anything you care about, there's other people that are also considering that issue.
I was going to do like cards. We're in a small enough setting. If you want, if you don't mind, I know it's kind of awkward. Maybe that's difficult to do. Any of you ladies have something on your mind you want to jump up and just shout at us real quick? A question or something top of mind? Any particular issue that's come up recently that you'd like to ask Penny about, or you just kind of generally want to talk about?
Or ask Chris.
Well, or me. I'll try. Is there anything about this election that you're thinking about this fall? Yes, ma'am. Let's get started.
Yeah. He couldn't win.
No.
I mean, the states were not lining up for him after this. He could have gone on, but it would just been continued losses. And California is really expensive. His polling in California is really bad. So, I mean, just the numbers weren't there for him. I actually think it was smart of him to go ahead and get out. I was sad because I endorsed him, but I think it was the right choice.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Yeah, that's, well, and you know, it, listen.
Did you hear her? She said Ted Cruz on the Supreme Court. That wouldn't be a bad idea.
That would be good, right?
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Mike Lee, Jeff Sessions, there's any number of people that would be fantastic.
Hey, talk to me about social conservatives versus more moderate or secular conservatives, if you like. Again, I come from a part of the country where people are much more socially conservative than they are out here. I don't think that's a secret. I hear often, you know, I'm a conservative, but I wish you Bible thumpers, I wish you pro-life people would just kind of tone it down. Yep. What do you say to them?
Well, it depends on who I'm talking to, but I would say I think that the issue of life is a dividing line. If you can't get basic freedom right, if you can't understand that a baby in the womb who has a beating heart at 18 days, who at 30 days has its eyes, ears, nose, and mouth and kidneys, that, you know, at 20 weeks can hear and respond to its mother's voice and feel pain and deserves legal protection in the womb, then I don't expect you to have the judgment to get anything else right. And on a and on a political level, for all you high donors, that, and it's always, frankly, it's that group usually that you hear it from, the people that are the big money people for the Republican Party, and like,
yes.
We don't need to talk about that, those social issues, we just want you to go away. I'm like, you know, you should thank us every day, because guess what? We're the people that go door to door for your candidate. We're the people that are out in the Catholic church parking lot shoving little flyers underneath the windshield until the priest runs you off. I've had that happen. We're the people who are going to the polls and actually voting and coming out for that issue. We're coming out because that's what's bringing us to the actual vote. The issue, your issues, by the way, don't get people that excited. Like there's very few of you that you know are highly motivated by corporate tax reform. I mean, there's just not that many. So we're the people that are keeping the wheels on. So you should be thankful.
Questions? Yes, ma'am. You in the pink there? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great question, and let's talk about this, because you were leading the charge right now on something that is white hot, and that's the Target situation with the transgender bathrooms. Mm-hmm. You are leading a protest against
Target
right now. Yes,
I am.
Right now.
And let me just say that CWA in our history, to my knowledge, maybe there was something out there I don't remember or know about, but has never... We've done boycotts, but we've never done boycotts before. And I felt like this was so important that this was the first one we've ever done. We've called a national boycott of Target. And here's why. In my book, in chapter 3, I tell the story that I went early on in my pregnancy with my daughter. I went out for a run one morning, and a man who I'd never met before attacked me, dragged me down behind an embankment, was going to rape me, but a woman that I'd never met before saw him drag me down and stopped and got involved and stopped me from being sexually assaulted. It was terrifying. It was traumatic. And, to this day, I mean, when I travel, it's hard for me to sleep. I don't know why that happened. I don't know why I was saved and other people aren't. I don't know why. God protected me, and I don't have explanation for any of it, except that I know this. I have a national platform to speak out for women and children who are victims, and I want to do that. And in the book I talk about, it was actually before all this kind of came up, I talk about the fact that in our nation, there are hundreds of thousands of the rape kits, the DNA samples that are collected when a woman's assaulted, that are not being processed, that are sitting on the shelves. So that means predators are free to roam and women don't get justice. And we have appropriated in the Debbie Smith Act $150 million a year to clear them up. Money's being wasted, not being done. Violence Against Women Act, $660 million a year. Nope, not going for that. And so, I wanted to speak out on that. That is something we can fix. That's something, that is one of the first things that government's supposed to do, right? It's supposed to protect the citizens. It makes no sense. But beyond that, on this issue, we are not afraid. I am not afraid of a transgender person coming into the bathroom and assaulting me or my daughter. I am very, very, very much afraid of one of the 850,000 sexual predators who are on the sexual registry list, including the man who attempted to rape me, will use this as an excuse and ability to go in and hurt vulnerable women and children. And it is foolish. It is foolish, like you said. Gutless and nutless, is what you said? I'm going to use that. I'm just taking it. I'm just telling you right now, I'm taking it. But, I mean, these CEOs are so, they have these boards. And let me tell you something. The other side is so smart. They get on the right boards. They have diversity committees that are paid lots of money. They go to stockholder meetings. They give out grades for corporations. If you don't do X, Y, and Z, you don't get the right grade. And they pressure. And by the way, at the cocktail party with all your intelligentsia friends, just like the people I was with, at that party for my husband, you want a little pat on the back for them because you're the most open-minded. Well, never mind that you're so open-minded, your brain fell out. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, let me play devil's advocate, because I just heard Megyn Kelly do this on Fox News the other night with the governor of North Carolina, and here's what she said, and let's play this out. Oh, Penny, we women, you know this as well as I do, we women go into the bathroom, we all have our own stalls, it's not like men can hang out and rape us.
Did she really say that?
Did you see it?
33% of rapes are done in public locations, including restrooms. 33%.
Am I misrepresenting? Did anybody see that exchange? Am I misrepresenting it?
When's the last time she was in a Target bathroom is what I want to know. Please. I love her, but really? I mean, come on. I mean, and there are reams and reams of cases of voyeurs. It just happened in Virginia the other day. This woman's in the bathroom with her 3-year-old, and she catches a glint out of her eye. A guy's got a mirror underneath the stall. She comes out in about it's a man in a dress when she comes out. He wasn't transgender. He was trying to get in there to see what he could see and record. And so I think she throttled him, which I think I would have too. But
question? Yes, ma'am, in the blue.
Away.
Where are women on that? I mean, as you women specifically, because, you know, when you see these stooges fist fighting at rallies, jumping on cop cars or fighting with one another, wherever these things, it's not women. Women aren't in the middle of it generally. I mean, maybe they're casualties of it being around it, but I wonder what you ladies think of that as you watch it. It's mostly a bunch of testosterone-laden morons, right? There are women.
I would like to claim moral superiority as a woman, but San Bernardino fixed that for me forever. She was evil. So, I mean, you know, look, I can't relate to that, right? I mean, overall, we don't. But, yeah, there's ill-mannered women just like there are men. Yeah, like the 10-year-old that was there. Like, he didn't drive himself. Who took him to that rally? It was probably his mother.
While you bring up San Bernardino, here's a good one. Islam. Mm-hmm. Sharia.
Yep.
The burqa. I remember vividly, we were at a Wawa not long ago, and my kids see a woman head to toe, slits for eyes. And they asked me, what's going on there? And I'm struggling to figure out how to explain that. Not because I want to give the woman a tough time, God bless America, if that's what she wants to do, but... it is certainly, I would never want to see my daughter in a burqa. How do you communicate that to your little girl? I don't want you to lead a life where you feel you've got to cover yourself head to toe with slits for eyes, but it's fine if she wants to.
Well, I mean, I think you do it with compassion because do you really think she wants to? I mean, maybe there's a few, but overall these are, and listen, I struggle with it too. When I see, I'm like, buck up, take that off. You're an American now. You don't have to wear that. It's okay. You can be part, you know. Let us get to know you. And I actually talk about that.
Why do liberal women tolerate that? I mean, for all the things that liberal women are so wound up about, they tolerate that. And I don't get it.
I agree. It is, you know, I call it burqa, and I'm not the first person to say this. It's burqa apartheid. Right? You are set aside from society. If all I can see is a slit in your eyes, you can never have any relationship. They have managed to ostracize her, set her apart. She can never have any power because she can never assimilate to the society that she's in. And so it is a way to control. And the very people who, you know, are so pro-woman, you can do whatever you want to with your body, don't say one word against Islamic fascism that does forced marriages, female genital mutilation, honor killings, and just some of the few things that we've talked about. The sex slavery, I mean, on and on and on. The crazy stuff that the left somehow thinks that you can't discuss. I actually, and I talk about in the book, I was at a meeting. I was asked to come meet with some very high-ranking people at the Gates Foundation. And they wanted to know how to get conservatives more involved in maternal health issues in Africa. Okay, you know, let's have this discussion. And we did. And one of the and I said to them, like, you know, you want our help, then you need to respect us and let people of faith, you know, be involved how we can be involved, you know. So we don't support abortion. We're not going to ever support abortion. They, oh yeah, they got that. And I said, you know, there are, and as an evangelical, I have a different opinion than some of my Catholic friends on birth control. But we all agree on the abort effective drugs. And I let them know that, and she wanted to know, you know, what is an abortifacive drug? And we talked about Ella and talked about some of those drugs and the morning after pill and some of those. And I said, but, you know, by the way, you know, my Catholic friends would tell you correctly that natural family planning's free in these African nations. We should bring the husband. And she's like, well, they have no power. I'm like, we can bring the husbands in. Let's have this conversation as a family if we can. And so, you know, it was a good exchange. But then we got to these, and she goes, well, you know, these girls are getting married at 9, and they're having, you know, umpteen babies. I just got to give them the shot. And I said, hang on. You're the flipping Gates Foundation. That is forced child brides. Why are you not dealing with that? And they're like, oh, that's paternalistic. We can't get involved. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You give hundreds of millions of dollars a year. These countries often are, you know, they're dependent. Like, they want this money. You could have a major influence. You don't want to be paternalistic. You don't want to get involved. And of course, it didn't go that well after that. But I said, isn't it kind of like just giving a rapist a condom and saying, be careful? I mean, isn't it the same thing? And then I guess it did really go down after that. But
yes, ma'am. That's Paige back there. Everybody, it's Paige Powers from the morning show we do there on Talk Radio 1210. I'm a sexist pig.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to keep an open mind and read more, and then I just get more angry at what I'm reading because it doesn't fit in line with, you know, how I value what I feel.
Do you get angry, or do you get to a point where you feel like you're just, there's a point where, as you say, you can't talk swine out of being swine? But you're confident in who you are. I wonder, I find that when I feel like maybe I'm not as well versed in something as I'd like to be is when I get mad, because I get a little scared, maybe.
That might be true. I think that's true.
I'm not mad.
But that's why you prepare ahead of time. But I mean, there's things you can't argue with, right? I mean, social science, good data. And I always try to quote, it's really great if you can quote the other side statistics, like the Guttmacher Institute. Like, whenever you're talking about abortion, quote the Guttmacher Institute. It's their numbers. Or if I'm talking about Planned Parenthood, somebody called me out. I'm like, it's from their own annual report. That's where I got that number. It's their numbers. It's not mine. So I think, you know, there are areas that you can't disagree with science. Although I will say the left are the science deniers of our time. Like, you know, we've had the sonogram for how many years now? Like, we know it's a baby. So, but it is hard. But, you know, I do think there's value in doing what you're doing, reading the other side, taking a look, because it does enable you to kind of see what they're thinking and be able to go against the argument. I watch MSNBC Morning Joe and go back and forth almost every morning.
Is it?
Sometimes it makes me mad, though.
Yeah. Is it a fair criticism? Donald Trump has leveled it and probably will try again, and it will no doubt come up a lot. Is it fair to go after Mrs. Clinton this fall about her husband and the infidelity?
Well, I think what's fair is what she did in regard to those women. I mean, I'm old enough to remember. She was, you know, his chief defender and part of that whole James Carville crew that tore those women to shreds, called them liars, called them trailer trash, that woman, you know, and the vast right-wing conspiracy, by the way, were the ones that somehow made him do it. I mean, the woman who says that women are supposed to be believed when they say they were raped or harassed is the very one who said that it wasn't true and harmed other women. So she can't have it both ways. I mean, there's plenty. We can. That's an ad that will make itself.
Yes, ma'am.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I liked him too.
And may I, on that point, Penny, I just, by a show of hands again, how many of you think that that's not only fair but would prefer to see Mrs. Clinton charged with that this fall? Do you think that's something that should be brought up? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you do. Now that, I mean, that blows my mind, because conventional wisdom would say, this is unseemly, women don't want to hear.
Well, she thinks it's unseemly, because she doesn't want to talk about it. But,
yeah, but I hear that all the time. Donald Trump bringing this up, well, is going to, this makes women unhappy. They don't attack the woman because her husband was a
philanderer. But it was very effective when he did. When he went back after her on that point, I mean, it was extremely effective, which I was kind of surprised that he did. I probably would have thought, oh, you can't say it, but it worked. And because most women, of course you can't control what your husband does. If he chooses to cheat, if he chooses to do something wrong, you can't control that. But most women don't go on national TV and defend them for it. And she did. And so, I mean, that's a whole different, it's a different story.
And Huma Abedin, her chief right hand.
Oh, my goodness.
And Anthony Weiner, her husband. You guys know Huma, don't
Poor
you?
Huma.
Anthony Weiner, her
Bless
husband.
Her
I mean, this is Mrs. Clinton's right hand. Her husband's Anthony Weiner.
Yes.
That's going to be a long year, isn't it?
Yes.
Questions? Any questions? Yes, ma'am. Because she defended him, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you, ma'am, behind her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Did you hear what Gloria Steinem said about women supporting Bernie? Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Gloria Steinem said that these women that are supporting Bernie are just doing it because that's where the boys are.
To get for the boys. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Miss Feminist said the ladies are out there supporting Bernie.
By the way, you know a fish does need a bicycle, right? Because she did get married, finally, like in her 60s or something. He died, so it didn't last long. But,
young women are young women, teenagers,
yes,
early voters,
yes,
college age girls. Are they different than the men, boys their age, in terms of the way they think or talk or process politics? Is there a different way to reach them?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, of course, I think you should give her my book. I mean, you know, but I'd love to sign it for her, by the way. But let her read that and see if there's one thing, it's different issues. You know, I talk about support for Israel. I talk about, you know, what we just talked about, Sharia law and Burqa apartheid and, you know, the plight of women around the world. I talk about, economics, work-family balance. I talk about we're not victims, by the way. I know the feminists say that we are, but we're not. There's more women graduating from college than men. There are more women getting graduate degrees. The majority of legal immigrants coming to this country are women because they know we have more liberty than anyone else in the world and more than any other time in history. Let her take a look, see if there's something that she's interested in, and then you can engage her, if you can get her to read it, pay her to read it.
It's not a bad idea, pay her to read Penny's book.
I paid my son to read Eric Metaxas' book, Seven Great Men, which, by the way, is a great book. And there's also Seven Women. But bribery's okay.
Have any of you had any success in reaching a younger person, student, child, and gotten to their head a little bit? You've had success doing that. You have?
Oh.
How old are you, ladies?
I'm 31.
And you're here of your own volition, free will. Yeah. Yeah. Well, may I? How about that? So may I ask you, if you don't mind sharing, was it your upbringing, or did you come to it on your own decision? Assuming I don't know that you're conservatives, but I don't know how you identify, but were you raised that way, or you came to it on your own?
Well, I was raised that way, but it was definitely my choice. I mean, my sister and I, we definitely had more politically active than my sister, but she still has the same values as I do, and my brother as well. But, I from reading, from a very young age, I was educated on, especially on social issues, such as and it shocked me, and it actually moved me.
So is it that we aren't engaging with our kids? Is it that we're just afraid to engage?
I don't know, but this does come up, but this is what I would say. It's not one conversation. It's a series of conversations. And if you aren't having them or you haven't had time to have them, then start it, you know? And by the way, and listen, I'm a working mom, so I struggle with this too, but it's really essential that we're sitting down together and having a meal together every day and looking across the table at each other so we can have those conversations and engage our kids. They shouldn't just be picking up our moral values in church. It has to come down from us too. And, you know, sometimes that's scary, but especially people who maybe have, you know, when you're in a room this big, one in three women have had an abortion. And if you don't have it, then there's, you know, somebody that has. And those are sometimes hard discussions they have, but I would encourage you to be transparent. I mean, there's a group called Silent No More that are women who are post-abortive that I think are the most impactful. When I brought my daughter to the March for Life, which, by the way, is a great thing to do. It's all young people. It's really cold. It's on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade every January in D.C. I brought my daughter for the first time when she was, I think, about probably 12 or 13. And we had had those discussions, you know, what it was and why we were there. And of course, children are very clear, I think, on that issue. First off, this generation own their own sonograms. So it's pretty clear to them. They can hold up and say, this is me. But, you know, they're very justice-oriented, and they recognize the injustice of hurting the least of these. But the most impactful group to her, and that whole, at the end of the day, when she was telling one of her friends about it, she's like, and I met these old ladies, which, by the way, they were probably 40. But I was like, she said, I met these old ladies who were still so broken and sad about their abortions. And that's what she took away from that day. So, I mean, I think, you know, there's a place for transparency, and there's a place for just honest discussion and good data, which, you know, I give you in the book. But I would encourage you, and, you know, it's not just children, your grandchildren. It's not too late. And you are, you know, Titus 2, the older women are to teach the younger women. We have an obligation. How do they learn if we don't tell them? They are going to get their information. They're going to get their values from school and from their friends. And the other fun thing about the Bernie Sanders free college people, when they start to add up, okay, if you're going to pay 90% taxes for the rest of your life, how much money do you want to make? Okay, this is what your tax rate would be. This is how much college costs if you just pay it outright. You're going to pay and pay and pay and pay for the rest of your life for college, or you can just pay for it now. Which would you rather do?
Question.
They can add.
Yes, ma'am. Hi. How many of you liked, did you hear that? Carly Fiorina, she asked, how many of you liked her?
I liked her.
Are there any women that didn't like Carly? I mean, it's okay if you didn't. You weren't nuts about her.
This is what I think happened. And I think I've seen some statistics to bear that. She wasn't people's first choice, but she was like their second choice, or certainly like for a running mate or for a cabinet position. And look, it was a huge field. I mean, there were some really great talent on that stage. And, you know, I don't know what happened. There were really good people who, in any other year, it would have been a slam dunk.
And there was that period of time. I mean, there was that moment. I'm bringing it up because I really want to know, how does this land with women? Mm-hmm. when Trump said that, look at that face.
Yes.
Now, and again, I don't, you know, we're
over. You're giving me flashbacks to Nam. Stop. But I'm trying to like him.
It's over. It's in the rearview mirror. He's the nominee. Fine. But I'm just saying, at that moment in that time, yeah. Is that the kind of stuff that sinks a male candidate? Is that with women, or do women say,
anybody else, it would have. I mean, so his unfavorables with women overall, and this isn't Republican women, was 71%. So he did terrible. He does terrible with independents. And he does terrible with Democrats, which you expect that. But independents, like, the gender gap for Romney was 20 points. That is the biggest in history. So we're kind of going in the wrong direction here. You have got in about 10 million more women than men vote in a general election. He's got to figure out a way to, I mean, he needs to go make nice with Carly Fiorina for
okay,
one thing.
Okay, but it was Romney. Romney who was Ward Cleaver, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the man was, you know, a Boy Scout.
I know, right?
He was boiled down to binders full of women. Mm-hmm. And that classic moment where George Stephanopoulos said, outlawing birth control. Where do you stand on that, Governor Romney? Now, Romney, incredulous, said, no one's talking about
no,
that, George.
And there's a Supreme Court decision called the Griswold decision. Even but if they wanted to, they couldn't.
That was the beginning. And all of a sudden, this Boy Scout, I mean, this man who you'd trust with your children, mm-hmm. is boiled down to a guy that thinks women belong in binders.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really remarkable to watch what they do, what they're able to do.
Well, there was moments where I really wanted to see, and gosh, can you believe we're rehashing 2012, but I wanted to see him turn and fight. When the president told him in the second debate that Planned Parenthood does mammograms, I wanted him to turn around, but see, he didn't know. He didn't know his stuff well enough to be like, no, they don't. They don't do any mammograms, but they do are the nation's largest abortion provider. They do 1 in 4 in the country, and I don't think they deserve $500 million a year of our tax dollars. That's what I wanted him to say, but he didn't know his stuff. And so, you know, unfortunately, he was a good guy and a businessman, and he knew that, but I don't know. I think that they made him milquetoast.
Planned Parenthood, here's something I get all the time, particularly from younger women. It's not all about abortion, Penny. We go there to get cheap health care. We go there to get our birth control cheaply. You know, Planned Parenthood's a service. And I don't use them for abortion, but I use them because they're my friendly neighborhood clinic.
You don't, but the minute you do get pregnant, that's what they're going to push you towards. 98% of women who are pregnant have an abortion the minute, you know, from getting services from Planned Parenthood. So if you walk in pregnant, only 2% of the time are they going to walk out still pregnant.
But when someone says, my daughter gets cheap birth control there
in
college.
There's 13,000 community health centers. There's 800 Planned Parenthood clinics around this country. And we're still giving them $500 million a year. And if you go to one of the community health centers, they're not just going to give you a pack of pills and send you on your way. They're also going to check your weight. They're going to check whether you smoke, they're going to check your blood pressure, they're going to do a whole range of health services because they just want to boil us down to one aspect of our lives, which is our sexual being.
Yeah.
I mean, the number one killer of women is heart disease. Mm. I mean, why aren't we giving it to people? If we really want to care for poor women, shouldn't we care for the whole woman instead of just one part of her? I don't know.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, good job.
Did you hear that? She said when people say, hey, I go to Planned Parenthood because the healthcare is cheap. She says, I thought Obamacare was supposed to make everything cheap. It's a good one. Yes, ma'am, back there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So you can walk in any doctor's office and get birth control.
It's $9 a month is the cost at Walmart, by the way.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Great point.
I would say a couple of things about that. Gosh, there's so much you could say about that. Two things. One is we were talking about economic inequality, but we need to really talk about family inequality. And that is the fact that there is not daddy in a home. And when that happens, and, you know, we've gone from like saying, oh, we shouldn't shame them, and I don't think we should, because there's many times women don't want to be in that situation, but they are. But to the point where somehow it's elevated to it's a good thing, you know. And we know that when, you know, a dad is in the home, a child's more likely to drop out of school, more likely to have mental health issues, more likely to have addiction issues. And, you know, a woman who has a child out of wedlock, first child, you're 60% more likely to live your life in poverty, and with the second, you're 70% more likely. So your sentence to, you know, a life of poverty, and you're sentencing your children. And so what do we do about that? Well, I mean, I think we got to change the culture, number one. The church needs to be the church and be in these children's lives and be in these women's lives and love them and bring them in and help them to grow from where they are. And we are not a nation, thank God, we're not a nation that when you're stuck, you have to stay stuck. You're born poor, you have to stay poor. My family is the perfect example. My grandmother had dropped out of school. I mean, I don't even know if she made it through elementary school. Worked in a textile factory in Tennessee, had 9 children, and my mother was one of those children. My mother dropped out of high school at 16 to marry my father, but then, you know, he had a good job, and there were, you know, a solid family, and she went back and got her GED, and then went to community college. And then within 2 generations, we went from abject poverty to the part where I made better decisions, and went to college, married my husband, then had my children, had the sequencing right, and, you know, by, you know, comparison, you know, live in such a more affluent life than they lived. But only in America can that happen in 2 generations. But so to the point, 2 things, family inequality, but also school choice. These kids should not be sentenced to failing schools and the whole, like, education establishment that wants to trap them in there is just morally corrupt. We've got to change that.
I'll do one more because I know folks want to meet Penny and get the book signed before we wrap up. Anybody, one more? Yes, ma'am. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, the 77 cent number.
Yes, you women cannot make as much money as we sexist pig men.
No, because it's a plot. It's a whole big plot just to keep us down.
That's a great idiot, and it's a huge issue, isn't it? It's one of the biggest. Women are not getting paid as much as we men. What do you say?
Okay, well, the truth is kinda true. That yes, kinda. The 77 cent number is completely inaccurate, and it's been debunked by Forbes magazine, by Slate. She mentioned one of the liberal magazines. Like, everybody agrees that that's a made up number. And it's still on the White House website, though, by the way, last time I checked. And they get it, how they get to that number is 2 ways. They don't take into account that this magical thing happens in our lives, and sometimes we become mothers, like the majority of us, by the way. And when that happens, the majority of us want to take time off of our career. And so if you step out of your career for, and I think the average time is like 5 years, like you think about it, like your kid gets to kindergarten, then you go back to work or whatever. When you don't come back in at exactly the same level as the man who stayed in the workforce the whole time. The other thing is they average together every career. Well, there's more women that are kindergarten teachers and more men that are in finance. So it's not going to work. Now, we can talk about why that is. Like, you know, maybe we're not doing enough STEM education, although I'm really not sure that's what it is. But okay, let's do more STEM education. But it's not this big conspiracy. In our 20s, we actually make more money than men. So you're going along and actually doing better than your male, you know, colleagues, and then all of a sudden motherhood happens. And you step out, and then sometimes you come back, and some women my age now are starting to come back in, but they're not going to come back in as CEO. They're going to come back in, and they're going to get back on the ladder, and they're going to start working their way back up. But I think that's a beautiful thing, that we should have the choices to stay home with our babies if we want to.
Penny Nance. You know, before we wrap up, I want to say a couple of things. Number one, isn't it great to be on a college campus in 2016 where we can have this discussion peacefully and freely? Uh-huh. And that's a testament to an extraordinary woman who runs this place, who happens to be here tonight. Dr. Marinda, would you please stand up and take a bow? Dr. Rosalie Marinda, where is she? Did she leave me? There she is, Dr. Marinda. And her husband Tony's here, Scott, Henry, all of the staff at Newman. They've been great friends and great hosts, and we're so grateful to you. So thank you for your friendship and hosting us today. Appreciate that. I also want to say a special thank you to the my friends and colleagues from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Paige Powers, who you met earlier here. She's in the audience and does a great job with me, and she has for, gosh, I don't know, what's it been, 15 years or something. A tremendous friend, maybe longer, but it's just, couldn't do the show without her. I'm blessed to be surrounded by remarkable women, Penny, and of course, A number one is my lovely wife, Christine, who's here tonight. Sweetheart. Plus, to be honest, when I told her that I was going to do an evening with all women, she kind of insisted that she be here. And most of all, and I know I speak for you, Penny, when I say thank you to you for making the night possible, coming out here, buying Penny's book, and being a part of the conversation and listening to our radio station. It's just, we can't say thank you enough. And we're so grateful to you that you participate in these things and made this one a first. Maybe we'll do it again. Want to do it again? I will tell you that we haven't announced this yet, and we won't yet, but June 30, Eric Bowling from Fox News, The Five, it will be our next speaker series guest. And that's up on the website if people want to go live and buy it now. Not quite yet, but will be. So I'm letting you in on something we haven't even talked about yet, but Eric Bowling will be my next guest for our next speaker series June 30th. If you want to put that in your calendar and be ready for that, that should be a great night. Get a bigger room for that one. But another hand for our guest tonight, Penny Nance.